Hello and welcome to Wise Women, The Vicar and the Witch. I'm Maggie Whitehouse and I'm the Vicar.
And I'm Susie Crockford and I'm the Witch. We are perceived, perhaps, as being on opposite ends of a spectrum, but we're friends and we see the common threads of our different experience of the sacred. So please join us as we discuss
life, the universe and everything.
Hello there, welcome to another edition, and we're usually going on omens, but I went to the Zero Waste shop in Morton Hampstead today, and I'm going to call that an omen, because you sent me to it, because I said to you, what do you do about mascara? What on earth do you do about the plastic in mascara? I need more mascara, I don't want to buy any mascara, because I've been trying so hard. Yeah. And you said, go to the Zero Waste shop in Morton Hampstead, and I did today, and I love it.
Fantastic, isn't it?
Yeah, it's got everything. I've been trying so hard with soap, shampoo bars and conditioner bars, and I haven't found a single thing that really suits my hair.
Right, okay.
Oh, yes, I found all sorts, and I bought them from farmers markets and all sorts of other things as well. But no, and just to have a shop to go to sit in and browse, and
just lovely. if you're listening and local, the Zero Waste shop in Morton Hampstead is amazing. Mm. There is also one in Bovey, and there is about to be one in Chagford, and there is one in Totnes, and there is one in Exeter.
There would certainly be one in Totnes.
Yeah, of course. In fact, I think that one in Totnes may be, I think it might be the first one in the country that was actually a Zero Waste shop rather than a refill shop.
Right.
Kind of thing. But it might not be. Maybe just the West Country or Devon or something, but maybe the country. Anyway, so yeah, if you have the misfortune not to live in Devon, poor soul, if there isn't one near you, start one up. Yeah. They're amazing. Yeah. They are absolutely amazing.
Yeah. Now, the difficulty I think that a lot of folk face, and I have faced, but right now it wasn't a problem, was the price. Because I was paying more than £20 for a mascara. Maximum I've ever paid before is 10. Because I'm not that vain.
I don't know enough about mascara to know whether it's worth it. But the point is with that one is that, yes, it was
expensive,
potentially extortionate the first time. But you'll never buy the outside of that mascara or the mascara wand ever again. You will only buy the black bit. And that is not anything close to £20. I can't remember what the refills are, but...
And then that itself is the lesson, isn't it, about refilling?
Yeah. And, you know, I know that price in inverted commas is a kind of thing that's bandied around for a lot in the kind of, well, I can't afford to be green, I can't afford to eat organic food, I can't afford to be zero waste, I can't afford blah, blah, blah. But, I mean, from my clearly I can afford it position, I actually really, truly look you in the eye, not you, but anyone, and ask you, can you afford not to?
Yes.
Can we
afford
not to? Yeah. And what do we mean by afford?
Yeah.
And my kind of, what do you call it? Is it a Damascene moment or something? Mm. Came walking around the supermarket with three small children, desperately wanting to, you know, be that woman that only bought organic things and tried not to buy tat and plastic and additives and all that thing, as much as anything else for my kid's health as anything. And I remember standing in front of something or other in the supermarket and kind of, on the one hand, there was the organic one and it cost £2.50 and there was the not organic one and it cost £1.50. And I was so in that thing of, oh, I can't afford it. And this incredible kind of booming voice from the spirits asked me, what did I mean by afford? Could I afford for it to cost the earth? Because that is what it does. All that cheap shit, it's costing us our earth.
Oh,
right now.
Susie, that's the phrase, isn't it? It's
costing
the earth. Yeah, I'm going to write that down. Because I need to have that in one of my little notebooks that I look for inspiration to remind me of all the wise things that you or I or other people have said
that I have totally forgotten. Would you like a piece of paper?
No, I've got paper, thank you, but I've sat on my pen. Yes, thank you very much.
And so for me, the idea of what costs the earth has got actually nothing to do with pennies, which in the end, as we have previously discussed at some length, it's only energy. The money is only energy, and so it's the costing the earth, the consequences for the other people, in the loosest sense of the word, the other beings on the planet, and for, you know, the next seven generations. There's a lot of talk at the moment about the children's fire. The G7 summit is about to take place, and there's everyone's being invited to light a candle, some kind of flame, to be in the belief that we can and we will be people who pay attention to what, to the consequences of our actions, basically, for all the children of all beings. Yeah. And that's
I do think this last year has been very good, certainly for people like us who do live in small communities and who communicate. Thank God for social media, because of the Southfield Facebook page and the Chagford Facebook page and the Moreton Hampstead Facebook page and the Okehampton one and all that, because we were swapping.
You know,
and somebody, some blessed woman, because my trainers had fallen to pieces, and I don't buy shoes I can't try on because I've got odd shaped feet, and that's, I've got to take care of my feet because they're walking on the earth. And some woman just posted in the South Seal thing saying, my teenage son has just grown out of his trainers before he even wore them. I've got a brand new pair of size 7 trainers. Does anybody want them? Yes!
Yeah.
And I was so grateful. Now, actually, they did hurt my feet a little bit, so I've had to learn to use the pumice stone and things like that. But actually, even that's okay. Mm. I've got a pumice stone. I've forgotten about using a pumice stone. You know, rubbing off a bit of hard skin.
It doesn't sound like the best way to treat your feet. It's kind of shave them down to make them fit the shoe.
No, it was just because they built up hard skin
as
a defence.
Right.
Because the shoe was rubbing.
Oh, okay.
Which is how my feet behave, you see. So I know that I could go to a chiropodist, but it was locked down, so I just got the pumice stone out and very gently rubbed it off.
Cool, well done.
Yeah, but the swaps and the changes and the fact also that this last year I've hardly worn mascara at all. I used to wear mascara every day except Sunday.
Why not on Sundays?
Oh, we always take Sundays off. Sundays are sort of a day off. It's funny, I don't wear jewellery on Sundays, and I don't wear makeup on Sundays, and I don't watch anything that could possibly be interpreted as violent. Generally, don't watch the television on Sundays. I just like to take a day off. I take it off the internet.
Off from absolutely everything?
Pretty much, yeah.
Wow, inspired.
It's jolly hard sometimes. And certainly when you've got a friend or acquaintance threatening suicide in Thailand, which was happening last week, and, you want to stay on Messenger just in case she's going to contact you. But actually, she had lots of other people this time and she didn't want to listen to me anyway. So I just go and pray. So that was different.
So I'm very intrigued. I know I'm derailing your conversation about zero waste, but I've been having a lot of conversations recently about rest and about the kind of, on the one hand, rest is a radical act, literally, because within the constructs of the contorted patriarchy, it's standing on a massive amount of Puritan work ethic.
Yeah.
And, you know,
by the lower classes. No, I didn't mean that. That was vicious, because I know a lot of people, I know a few people who work very hard who are not in the lower classes, but that's the perception of it, isn't it?
Yeah, maybe. I don't know. I'm kind of reeling from the... It's so funny. I live in my little tiny bubble, perhaps only because I've got my head so deeply in the sand, I'm just not aware. I'm kind of shocked that you used the word lower class.
So am I.
Yeah.
I live in
a classless society in my own little mind, but I'm sure that's not true.
So do I. Just as a writer, we'll probably talk about this other time. I've been exploring hidden depths of anger from my childhood that are coming up, and I'm finding that I am saying fairly outrageous things. So if I stuff sorry
that's not
no but phrases that are coming up that I've always said I wasn't involved with or I wasn't angry about or something is starting to come up. So my saying yes, but the lower classes, I think, oh, that's a little old-fashioned meme that has been stuck in my unconscious somewhere, and it's coming out now. So I apologise, everybody, if I'm going to be radically rude about a lot of things, worse than usual, or say silly things.
No, I didn't mean you were rude. I just meant
no.
Okay, right.
Were back to...
Radical rest.
Yes.
So, please stop me if I already said this last time we met, but I had a hilarious encounter with the spirits a little while ago where they effectively looked over the rim of their granny glasses at me in a on the one hand very tongue-in-cheek and on the other hand quite kind of sincere way. And I bang on a lot when I'm teaching in my workshops about restoration, so the restoration of reciprocity, the restoration of balance, the restoration of the sacred, blah, blah, blah. And they looked at me in this terribly old-fashioned but quite sort of cheeky way, mocking, and said, "Restoration, Susie. The most important part of that word is the first four letters. Rest." And I kind of went, I felt like a small dog with my tail between my legs as I kind of ambled off. Because, you know, again, I've been spouting about rest for many a long year and desperately trying to incorporate it into my own life. Yeah. And, you know, not to put too fine a point on it, I'm shit at it.
Mm.
I keep trying to rest. I'm doing as I'm told. I'm not having any more, you know, things put in my diary than what's already there, and it is ridiculously full. But even on a day which I supposedly have off, I end up doing something really daft, like, I don't know, cleaning out the whole larder or painting a wall or doing the garden or something. And it's only in retrospect that I'm like, oh, yeah, that's not rest, is it? It's not work, but it's not rest.
No. No.
So tell me about how to take a day off. You don't put mascara on. You don't watch telly.
Well, I actually also take a day off my affirmations.
Okay.
Because I do affirmations morning and night. I do 100 appreciations. But I've actually also learnt lately that I've got to do 100 fuck yous sometimes. To get into the clear out old certain situation, bring them up to consciousness and turn it out. Well, we have a lie in. It's a special day. It's no alarm, two biscuit day.
Fantastic.
Cup of tea in bed. And it's not really any different from any other day, except I turn my computer off at 6 o'clock on a Saturday night, and that's for the Sabbath Eve, because I work my Sabbath the way the Jewish folk did, which is evening to evening.
And the Celts.
Still do, yeah.
Yeah.
So the computer goes off Saturday night, and basically on Sunday it just doesn't go on. And it's so difficult because I always so often want to look up a recipe on the internet or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And so I will cheat by asking Lan to print off the recipe or something like that if necessary. And sometimes I do break the vow because it is utterly necessary that I talk to somebody. And when there are people in crisis, I will leave Messenger on. And I will just look to see who the message is from, but I will not answer it if it isn't a crisis. So I often have to go around on Monday and say, sorry, I didn't get back to you.
But, so, okay, when you get to the end of Sunday,
yes,
do you feel rested?
Oh, yes. I feel better rested if I... What I usually do is I switch the computer on again Sunday evening so I can just delete all the crap. So when I start Monday morning, I don't have to do a whole load of admin. Mm. But I feel better if I don't do that as well. I need two nights, really. And
so,
2 days.
So you're not running around painting walls or mucking out larders?
Not usually, though I have been planting out my vegetables.
Okay.
But what I have done lately, because I'm really working with this old anger, because I have such blocks on anger, which is a subject for the next one probably, but... one of the ways I can release the stress of anger is through tears, because it was the old girl thing of girls can cry, boys can't, boys can get cross, girls can't.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm going to be rude, a crap TV show that's on every afternoon, which makes me cry.
Okay, what's it called?
Every day, it's called Say Yes to the Dress.
Ha ha, you told me about this before.
Yes, and it's simply about brides choosing their wedding dress. And all of human life is in there. The controlling mother, the weak mother, the pushy girl, the pushy fiancé. So it's a little soap opera of real people. But the stuff in it about, even though the dress shops, of course, get huge publicity from being stars of this show, they are generous at times, you know. And when there's somebody who's coming in who's just about to start chemotherapy, for example, so has come to choose her wedding dress the day before because she won't feel well enough to do it at the time, you know, and while she's still got her own hair and all that, she's going to have to wear a wig for her wedding. And you know, then she's got a budget of, say, $2,000. Part of me is going, $2,000? Jeez, you know, the amount of money they spend on these things. So it helps with my outrage quotient on that. And quite frequently, they'll get her to look round the dresses. If she's, you know, if she's somebody in trouble, or she's just lost her mother, or something like that, they'll get her to look round the dresses, and they won't tell her the price. And when she chooses the one she wants, even if it's $10,000, they'll sell it to her for $2,000.
Oh!
And occasionally they give it away free.
Wow.
And that sort of generosity, even such a silly programme about such vanity, frankly, because spending that much money on a frock you're going to wear once is really crazy.
Madness, isn't it? Yeah.
It's utterly crazy.
Yeah.
I'm talking about my wedding dresses. I've been married 3 times. But anyway, it never had a wonderful, great big frock like that.
Yeah.
And I just sit there for maybe a half an hour, maybe an hour a night before supper, and I sit there and I weep.
Yeah.
I just weep and weep, and I know it's therapy.
Yeah.
And it's also taught me not to be such an arrogant bitch about other people who watch reality
TV.
Shows.
Yeah.
Yay. Because you suddenly realise, okay, I can see what's good in this for me. I don't think that the majority of things like soap operas necessarily are that good for us because there's so much anger in them.
Mm.
And I really don't think we do ourselves any good by continually watching shows that numb us to violence and numb us to hate, because we don't care about what the government does because it's just another soap opera.
Yeah, that's the truth.
Or we project anger onto it, but we sort of see it as a kind of an aggravating fiction.
Yeah.
Anything that's not directly under my nose potentially is an aggravating fiction when you live in a world that's full of...
And if we are continually bombarded with news from all over the world, we won't take care of our own little patch.
No, exactly. Which is, I must admit, why I hardly participate in any of that stuff at all. I don't really listen to the news. I don't really watch telly.
No.
Although I did get very excited. Every now and then I'll have enough friends going, have you seen da-da-da?
Yes.
To investigate something. And occasionally I absolutely will get really excited about something or other and watch it. And I caught sight of a thing called, Domina. And I thought, ooh, that looks as if it could be as good as, Britannia.
Mm.
Which I loved Britannia. I thought it was amazing. And I watched one episode, and maybe I should have given it more of a chance, but I, after that, deleted the thing that said it would record it, because I just thought it was a horrible programme about horrible people doing horrible things to each other.
Yeah.
And I cannot find that entertaining.
Yeah.
And I'll happily watch something that will make me cry, and maybe I would watch things that would make me angry if I thought they were really righteous. I don't know. But I get how that absolutely could be therapy.
Yeah.
But I also do think that as a culture, we do, exactly as you say, numb ourselves terribly, especially to things like violence.
Yeah. Yeah. We're still watching Battlestar Galactica. I'd never seen it, the TV series. And there's mysticism in it. Mm-hmm. And there's redemption and there's forgiveness. And yes, there's a lot of battles. And there's also the learning to live with your enemy.
Mm-hmm.
And also the projecting onto the enemy because they're robots who look like humans, you know. And,
oh, well, they were.
Well, they're developing souls. That's what's happening.
Uh-huh.
Souls are coming into the world. It's more complicated than that. But it's nerve-wracking. And every Saturday night, we sit down in front of the television, hold hands and gulp and say, OK, here we go. And lots of our friends, we had some friends come and stay last year when they were allowed to, and we were just starting it, and they watched it with us. And they went straight home and binge-watched the lot. I don't know how they've got the inner strength. I really don't. So we have 2 episodes a week and there's two weeks left. And I said to Lion, what are we going to do without it? And he said, breathe easy.
The world is not being invaded or whatever happens.
Oh, no. It's they're looking for a new home. They're seeking for a new planet. It's a space mystery. Yeah. Basically, the captain's called Adama and his son is called Apollo, and one of the children is Hera. And
oh, excellent.
So it's got all that in it. It's got the one god and the gods, and that's the kind of thing I really do like, because it's fierce adventure, and there is transformation, there is retribution, and there is honour. And anyway, I'm banging on about it, but there aren't that many things that I'll watch that do go around sending out spaceships killing people.
And so is that a Sunday thing?
Saturday night.
That's a Saturday
night. It's recorded on Friday night.
So is it part of Deep Rest?
Probably not, no, to be perfectly honest. But it feels like it... Now, it sounds so wanky bollocks, but it's how I feel about it. It feels like it brings together the violence of the world in a way that is at least leading to a new hope.
Mm-hmm.
Sort of a bit like the Star Wars film. It's got all those things in it. You have the power. You have the strength. You must be... you must work for justice. And there's a scene in it where there's this... ghastly character who actually was the cause of the Cylons being able to destroy Caprica, which was their planet. Mm. And he was beguiled by a Cylon woman form and gave him the secrets, and he's managed to escape, and he's a weaselly, whiny little git, frankly, and he goes on bit. But he's starting to be transformed. You can see he's starting to realise what he's done and how to be good. And he's taken to trial at one point because... they managed to elect him president of all the ships in the colonies. And they land on a planet called New Caprica and tried to rebuild it. And blah, 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 blah. But anyway, he betrays them all and works with the Cylons, who are the bad guys, allegedly. And in the end, there's a trial aboard Colonial One of the ships, where everybody, they're all wanting to execute him, prosecute him, that kind of thing. And the Admiral's son, Apollo, who... is the grandson of a lawyer, realises he doesn't want to be a pilot killing people, he wants to be a defence lawyer, which again is a change. And he sits there and he just gives this amazing speech about forgiveness. And he said, what will you forgive? You've forgiven me for killing hundreds because you thought they were the enemy.
Mm.
And I thought they were the enemy. But we're learning these people have souls.
Wow.
You have forgiven me for this. You have forgiven the Admiral for this. You have forgiven so-and-so for this. You have forgiven everybody for this, this, this. Yet you will not forgive this one man who admits he is weak, who was elected president when he wasn't capable, and who was doing the best he could in the level of fear he was in. And he said, I vote we accept all the forgiveness that we have been given. And forgive him. And for that speech alone...
Yeah, it sounds like an amazing speech.
Yeah.
Do you know who writes it?
No, I will research that. But one of the other things we've gone is we've gone back to The West Wing, which is another... the box set Aaron Sorkin. Because that's got goodness in it too. And I really rate Aaron Sorkin's writing. And have you ever watched The American President? And we haven't got round to the plastic. And we're...
It's hopeless asking me if I've watched anything.
No, but there's a speech about this is American president who falls in love with an unsuitable woman. He's widowed. And he falls in love with an environmental activist, or actually a political activist on behalf of the environment. And he loses everybody, the whole country's going, you know, what about your little daughter? You're sleeping with this woman. You're doing this, you're doing that. And in the end, she dumps him because he's more concerned with keeping his job than doing it.
Ooh.
And he sacrifices the bill that she's bringing in about the environment to get the fossil fuel people to back another bill. And then he has this moment of revelation. And you can just watch this speech on YouTube and it's amazing. Michael Douglas is the actor. And he says, and he just stands up and owns up. And he says, this last year I've become more interested in keeping my job than doing my job. And that ends now. And... the woman was attacked by his rival coming up to a new election, and he hasn't said anything to the press. And he just stands up and says, I've loved two women in my life. I lost the first to cancer, and I lost the second because I was more interested in keeping my job than doing my job. And then he turns and looks at the camera and says to Bob, the other guy, the opposition, says, Sidney Allen Wayne has done nothing to you, Bob. She's done nothing but put herself through college and work for the things she believes in. If you want to come after anyone, you come after me. Because that's an equal fight, because she's way out of your league. And it's just the most gorgeous speech. It's the kind of speech you think that, well, I always think with Josiah Bartlett in the West Wing, that's the best president America never had.
Oh, that's hilarious. Is it about a president?
Yes, he's... Michael Sheen? No, Michael Sheen's the English actor. Martin Sheen, as the president of the USA. It's all about his advisors, and he's a devout Catholic. And the ethics and the discussions in it are absolutely fascinating. You learn all about the political system and how you have to negotiate things and small victories and huge losses. And that. And I do find it fascinating. The one we were watching last night was... Oh, it was so poignant. Toby Ziegler, communications director, really bad-tempered, prejudiced Jewish guy. Not the Jewish guys are prejudiced, but Toby is a case in himself as a character. And he gets called by the police a couple of days before Christmas because they found a homeless guy dead on a bench with Toby's card in his pocket. Mm. And the guy's wearing a coat he gave to Goodwill, the charity shop. Mm-hmm. And Toby goes and looks at him. And he's called out to where the man is lying on the bench. And he says things like, why is he still here? He's obviously been dead a long time. And they said, well, he's not a priority for the ambulance service. There's just one policeman standing next to him. And then Toby looks at his arm and says, he's a veteran. There's a tattoo. He was in Korea. Mm-hmm. And just something clicks in him about the shame of the homeless veterans. Mm. And he goes back and he quite wickedly uses the president's name to organise a full military honours funeral at Arlington Cemetery for this guy. But the follow-on to it is that, the president is sort of cross with him but quite understands why he did it. Mm. And he finds the homeless man's brother, who's also homeless. And the president's personal assistant lost both her sons in Vietnam on Christmas Eve.
Oh, my God.
Her twin sons. So she says, I would like to come with you. So there's this funeral at Arlington Cemetery with one homeless man, Toby Ziegler, advisor to the president, the president's PA, and this full military honours with the guns and the folding of the flag. And in one way, how utterly useless, because the man's dead. But what a programme to make to point this out.
Yeah.
That the poor man had to go and fight for his country. And, of course, nowadays we laud them as heroes, but we still don't do anything much about the PTSD or anything like that.
No.
So I've rambled on for ages about that, and I wanted to talk about my mother's plastic.
Have we run out of time?
No, we're on 27 minutes.
We can go and ramble on about plastic for a bit.
Yeah, it's just been utterly fascinating for me because this last year particularly, before then, but specifically this last year, I've been not buying plastic much as I possibly can. Occasionally you got it, but very rarely now. And we've been clearing out my mum's house because she's moved into this wonderful retirement home. And it is wonderful. And I'm just aghast at the amount of plastic. I've got a whole drawer now full of little plastic bags for storing things in and cling film plastic shoes for gardening. And you know the terrible thing is, Susie, they're so comfortable. They are so comfortable. And one of those dusting sticks that's got this sort of tingly nylon thing that dusts so absolutely beautiful. I've always used a wooden one with feathers. Mm-hmm. And this is 100 times better. And I just suddenly thought, well, I get it then.
Right.
We went, so it's so easy to go for this stuff because it so works so well.
Right.
But I'm still going, my God, what do I do with all this stuff? And I've got to use it up.
Yeah, I guess. Use it or clean it and give it to a charity shop so someone else can use it.
Yeah, except which is what I am doing, But it's just shocking how much this perfectly lovely the amount of plastic. And in a way it's reassuring because it's really made me realise how well I am doing.
Yes. Ah, good, yeah.
I'm going to try all the moisturisers at the Zero Waste Shop, but I am currently buying my moisturiser from Kenwardine Aromatics. You can find them on Facebook. It's a girl called Janet. She makes the most beautiful moisturisers, all organic, homemade creams and stuff. And she's at Tavistock Market on Saturdays, but she's got her own website. And she, when she sent her first box to me, it had got what I thought was polystyrene bubble things in it.
They're corn?
Yes, of course they're corn. So I messaged her and went, no, they're corn. I wouldn't dream of it. And I was just so pleased that I bothered, because we've now got a relationship where we message backwards and forwards, because I told her that she'd forgotten. She'd put the postage price back on since lockdown ended, because she was trying to encourage customers to come without it. And she'd said that she'd put it back on, but it didn't appear at the checkout. So I messaged her and said, you haven't got the postage on. Can I pay you by PayPal? And she said, no, for that you don't.
Yeah.
Which was sweet.
But will she do refills? If she's making it herself, presumably you must be able to send your pot back and she could.
Probably you can. She uses glass, though.
Oh, amazing.
Yeah, it's all glass. Or it's in a kind of corn plastic.
Mm-hmm. I got very excited recently by discovering that there is a world out there in which there's all kinds of products being made and sold simply in a cardboard tube.
Yes.
And so you can get your anything, whether it's your face potion or armpit cream or
in a cardboard.
Anything, just in a cardboard tube. It's fantastic.
Doesn't it have to be lined for face cream?
So I think maybe it's lined with beeswax. My one doesn't.
Yes, of course you could line with wax.
Yeah.
I do remember very briefly years ago when I was training to do funerals, because I worked downstairs in a crematorium for a week, which was very life changingly powerfully good for me. And talking to the guys about how much they hate the wicker coffins. Because you can't put them in a hot cremator, so you have to. Usually, what they do is they have the cremator boy very at the top speed, open the door, push the coffin in, and they do it with a blessing. You know, every single one that I've worked in, I visited 8 crematoria, worked downstairs in 8 crematoria. Everyone they go, good luck, mate, or something like that. It's all right, doesn't hurt.
Yeah.
Always talk. But when it's one of the bamboo coffins, which are beautiful, they have to put it up from cold.
Why?
Because otherwise it explodes.
Whoa.
And shoots the body out.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah. Well, we don't get told that in the news, do we?
No.
And of course, if you have to do it from zero, it's going to take nearly an hour longer, which means they have to do unpaid overtime.
Gosh.
And they're until 8 or 9.
To be fair, I've never quite understood why you would choose a willow coffin but then go to a crematorium. Simply because the willow coffin is very ecological. The crematorium is most definitely not.
It's one of these odd things. The willow coffin may be so, but it's got to be lined. And you have at the moment, I think you're having to get a special kind of biodegradable plastic from Finland. Because we aren't making it here yet, but it has to be lined with something.
Yeah.
So it took a while to get some kind of lining there, which is why I was asking about the cardboard pots, because there would have to be some kind of lining. But the thing is, we can do it.
Yeah.
If we have to, we'll invent something very quickly.
I know. Didn't lockdown just show us that?
Yeah.
How all our stories about, well, we can't do this and we can't do that and we can't do this are absolute rubbish.
Yeah.
And that we can do whatever we set our minds to, actually, when it comes to stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't remember if it's a province in India or the whole of India suddenly decided to ban anything by way of portable cutlery, plates, cups, etc. that wasn't compostable. Yeah.
Yeah. And even the compostable ones have got to go to the right recycler to be composted. I found that out in America when I was attending one of Richard Rohr's conferences, and I complained about the fact the amount of plastic they were using, all the plastic knives and forks. And I actually stood up and said, if you'll use metal, I'll wash them. I'll stay behind each night and I'll wash them because I can't handle this. Yeah. And they came back and said, oh, they're all compostable. And I thought, oh, well, that's great. And then I went and looked on the internet, and compostable only means compostable if you recycle it to the correct plant for recycling. If it goes in your everyday compostable, your everyday recycling, it'll go with the plastics.
Yeah. That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. So it does take more effort.
Yes.
But
yes.
Yeah.
And, you know, that's going straight back round to the blooming rest conversation, which we appear to be having in tangent to the zero waste conversation.
Start that again tomorrow.
Which is why have we become a nation who need to do all our eating and drinking on the run?
Yes.
And, you know, I kind of get it within lockdown that lots of places who've managed to stay open are, you know, exclusively using disposable cutlery and luckily, actually, in my experience, most of them compostable because there's less risk of transmission. But yeah. That aside, just generally, why have we no longer got time to sit down somewhere and use a knife and fork yes. and a plate, yes. which someone can then wash in very hot water and it's, you know, it's yeah. as healthy as... Yeah. As anything. And once again, so much better for the planet.
Yeah.
It's not costing us the earth.
Yes. Yeah, I don't know. All I do know is that the first time I went to Edinburgh Fringe, which is now about six years ago, I think, and I was horrified at the amount of plastic up there, even then. Mm-hmm. So ever since then, I have always kept a knife, fork and spoon in my handbag, in a plastic bag.
Yeah, well done. You don't even need it to be a special, newfangled... No. Closedable fork thing. No. Spork, whatever they call them.
No. I quite often forget to wash them when I come out. They've never got mouldy on me yet. But it's such a simple thing to do because it's
yeah.
cutlery.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, I'm sure we've run over.
We have. Yeah. We have.
Okay.
Thank you so much for listening. I'll let her get a word in edgeways next time. Well, I might.
She might.
Bye. And don't forget, we do now have a Patreon page. I'll try and remember to put the link at the bottom. If you feel like supporting us for a cup of coffee a month or something, even though we don't drink coffee.
Do
you?
Yes.
Ooh.
Occasionally.
A cup of coffee or a cup of tea. Thank you very much. Details on the page. And take care. We'll see you next week.
Bye.